Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Central Depository Services Limited conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Nilesh Kittur from Central Depository Services Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Good afternoon. A warm welcome to CDSL conference call. From management side, we have Mr. Girish Amesara, who is CFO of CDSL, Mr. Ramkumar, who is the Head of Business Development and Operations, and Mr. Sunil Alvares, who is the MD and CEO of CDSL Ventures Limited. Now, I request Nirav to open the floor for discussion.
Thank you very much. We'll now open the floor for discussion. We request all the participants not to place the call on hold during the conference call. Thank you, participants. You may now go ahead with the discussion.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah, hi. My name is Sanjeev. Sanjeev and Vaidyanathan from Eternity Capital. Thanks for giving us the opportunity to have this interaction. This is actually the first time we are interacting with the company. So first of all, congrats on an extremely successful performance from the company over the last many years. Our intention when we speak to the company is to understand, to answer two main questions. Question one is, how do you think about the long-term growth and returns outlook for the business? And second is, what kind of competitive advantage do you think that you have, which allows you to grow and have that kind of margins and stuff? So I will, you know, those are our main questions. If we have some time, I can go into the next one. Thank you.
On long-term viability or question on your long term, I think it's a futuristic question, and I doubt we will be able to answer your question on any futuristic assumption. I think we will focus our discussion on what is the result that we have achieved, and any forward looking statement should be avoided.
Okay, I mean, again, I'm not looking for exact numerical answers, but I'm sure as a business or as a company, you'd have a certain strategic outlook for, and I say long term, it's the next 5 to 10 years. You'd have a certain thinking about how you would like to approach the growth of the business itself. So anything that you can share on that without, you know, having to share anything futuristic in terms of what you just mentioned. It will be helpful for us to understand how the company thinks, how the management thinks about their long-term prospects.
Ramkumar, you have anything on business front to tell? But
no, sir. I was logging in, no. So I was logging in, so I was not. I didn't hear the question.
So Sanjeev, can you repeat your question, please?
Sure. Maybe I'll actually set one more additional line of context. So, you know, the Eternity Capital, we are a long-term, long-only fund. What that means is we tend to invest in businesses with an intention to own for at least 5 years, if not longer. And we only invest in what we consider high-quality businesses. And again, I'm sure everyone has their own definition. And from whatever we know about CDSL, we think it qualifies. And that's why we're having this conversation. So when we do work on companies like this, the two main questions we try to answer are, what is the long term? And when I say long term, it's 5 years, if not longer, outlook for the business. And you know, what we'd like to hear is how the business, how the company itself thinks about it. In whichever way you can share with us, how do you think about the long term outlook for the business? And connected to that, what is the competitive advantage that the company enjoys? Usually, you know, as you know, not all companies have a competitive advantage, which is why they don't have visibility about either growth or margins, and usually neither of them are very attractive. In your particular case, you have certain things that you are very positive about the business and the business model. What is that which allows you to do that? And what, you know, in your view, what are the competitive advantages you enjoy today and you likely enjoy in the future? So these two are our main questions. I'm sure we'll have additional questions, but you know, just to start out with, these two would be great if you can help answer them.
So, Girish sir, can I answer this question, sir? Part of it at least?
Yes, please.
Sir, as far as the outlook for 5 years is concerned, we will not be able to comment on it. Because as a policy, we don't do any future-looking statements and all. Second thing is in terms of our strengths and weaknesses that I can tell you is that right from day one, when we started operations, our emphasis has always been on giving service and better technological support to the DPs, who I may say loosely as clients. So this has been the fulcrum of our, and we were the first ones to, you know, start the concept of relationship manager. So each of the business partners, be it a DP or RTA or issuer company, is attached to one particular individual within the company. And then they take it forward in terms of liaising with various departments within the depository. So these are the three pillars of the way in which we look at things. So that is something that we have maintained right from day one of operations. So we will continue to do that.
And if I may, you know, I understand you can't talk about the future, but, you know, clearly when people talk about depositories in India, they either talk about you or they talk about NSDL. Right? It's almost as if there is, I think there are others who are very, very small, but it's almost as if they don't exist for a majority of individuals or companies.
There are only two depositories. Sir, it's a duopolistic kind of a situation in India. There are only two depositories, NSDL and CDSL. So there is no other depository if you're talking about security depositories.
Correct. So I was going to go into some other action, but let me talk about this for a moment. So clearly, you know, between you and NSDL, you have certain advantages over them and they have certain advantages over you. How do you think about, building those advantages out? You know, from your point of view, where are you stronger? Where are you weaker? Would love to hear a little bit more about that.
Sir, a generalized statement I made about these three pillars that we believe in. So I would leave it with you because we wouldn't want to discuss strategy here because that could create the business issues for us.
Okay. But anything that you can say, I mean, if one were to become a shareholder, wouldn't they require some level of understanding about the business? Whatever you can share, I'm not asking you to share competitive intelligence.
No, see, as an investor, what you need to know is that we are a depository. So we are, as far as the regulatory directives are concerned, we are interested with the role or job of holding securities in the demat form for all clients who are having transactions in terms of holding or doing transactions in India.
Right.
So this is the base. And in addition to that, you can look at our website to see what our bylaws or operating instructions are to see how we are, you know, operating each of those activities that I mentioned earlier. And last is the income stream. That again is available in the operating instructions as to this is what we charge for each of these activities. That again is regulated by SEBI in terms of what the rates could be, what the tariff could be as far as we are allowed to charge. So to that extent, we are living in a tightly regulated environment as far as billing is concerned. But in terms of the services, that is something that we can only do better as we go along.
Got it. So great. I think this is helpful. And we have read a large amount of your material already, including the call.
Yeah.
So some of this, for us, is more confirmatory than anything else, but I understand the constraints you're working with. Maybe
fine.
If I can move on to the regulatory aspect of what you just talked about. So clearly there are certain restrictions, I think there's a part of your business where the pricing is regulated, not all parts of the business. And then even before that, there is an entry barrier itself, right? I mean, while a more lenient depository licensing regime has been talked about, right now there are only two of you. So that is a regulatory, one big regulation. Apart from that...
There is a gap here, if I may say so. Is that as per the regulations, any entity can come out with being a depository. So it is not that nobody can come in. Presently, people are not coming for whatever reason, business reasons maybe, but people can come in.
Okay. So right now, Actually, that's a good point. I thought it was only being debated about corporate.
No. There is a clear-cut regulation that any exchange, sorry, any entity can come in as far as setting up exchange or deposit. In fact, they use the word MII, which includes exchange, clearing corporation, and depository. So people can come in. They have given certain rules as to who can hold how many shares, and shares means in terms of percentage holding, and in how many years they have to divest, etc. All those things are mentioned in the regulation as far as SEBI is concerned. But presently what you said is right. So there is a duopolistic kind of an environment, and there is a certain amount of entry barrier. But regulatorily there is no barrier. It is only that business reasons wise there could be some barrier that people may think twice before entering this.
Have other companies tried to enter this in the past? From let's say in the last 5 years or 10 years, have there been attempts by somebody apart from CDSL and NSDL to enter the market?
Sir, as far as deposit is concerned, I'm not aware of it. But if you look at the deposit a little bit beyond in terms of commodities, yes, there has been several entities which have started the depository for commodities. For example, MCX, NSC, BSE, everybody run their own depository for bullion.
Understand.
Then if you talk about agri-commodities, there are two companies. One is our own subsidiary called CDSL Commodity Deposit Limited, and another is a subsidiary of NCDX called National NERL, that is this thing, National, I forgot the full name, it is NERL, that's wholly owned subsidiary of NCDX.
Understand. So your point is less the regulatory thing, it's more a business reason why people have not...
Correct. So there is no entry barrier, so to say.
Understand. But there is a pricing thing, just going back to your point. So there are certain things that you are allowed to price to a limit, and there are certain things you have a little bit more clear rein to charge pricing.
No, sir, every bit of pricing that we do is regulated, tightly regulated by SEBI. So whatever we do in terms of pricing, we have to run it through SEBI. Only after their go ahead, we can go ahead with terms of, updating it to the market.
And in general, I think my understanding is at least fast. I don't think SEBI has ever said no to your pricing request. Is that correct?
No, that would not be known to you, no, sir.
I see. Only what is accepted comes out in the open, is it?
Correct, obviously.
Okay. So when you do think about the pricing decision that you take, how does that get determined, meaning both regulatorily as well as commercially? What is the thinking behind a pricing change, higher or lower?
See, higher and lower is very difficult to answer. But whatever we do, we look at some aspect of how much it will cost us, and then we put forward a proposal to SEBI. Then SEBI's own wisdom says that we have to go ahead with the price, or we have to reduce it. There is no question of SEBI asking us to increase. So what we suppose.
Obviously, the
other way around,
right?
Yeah.
No, I ask this question because, again, I'm telling you something you know much better than I do. In a business like yours, every incremental revenue has very high returns, very high margins and very, very high returns. So, logically, what one would expect is over long periods of time, pricing to fall. It's just that the pace of the fall or if you can maintain the pricing even, that would be amazing because there will be a cost pressure as well.
Correct. If you see historically, in 99 when we started, the price was much, much higher. I'm talking, when I say we, it is depositories that I'm talking about in a consolidated manner. The price was in percentage terms of the value of the underlying stock covered by the transaction. Now you have come to a very flat rate. It is, if you transfer it in US dollar terms, it is hardly anything. It is 4.25 rupees as far as CDSL is concerned at the highest level. So 4.25 rupees is not even 10 cents if you go to see. Correct, na? So it is maybe 5 cents or a little bit more than that.
So your point is it has reached a level by now that there is the pressure to reduce pricing is no longer as high as it was 20 years or 30 years back.
No, sir. Pressure to reduce price will always be there from the market, from everybody, because everybody at the end of the day wants things free, But there is a fine balance that we need to, find out. between free and between what we think is palatable to us.
Correct. That's correct. And I think here is where my earlier question also comes in, which is, to some extent it seems like, and please correct me if I'm wrong in my perception, because while you are listed, NSDL is not. It seems like you have taken an approach where you are far stronger in individual BOs and actually retail segment, whereas NSDL has either chosen or has moved towards larger entities and corporates. Is that correct? And if so, was there a particular point at which this decision ended up happening, or was it just a more natural progression?
Sir, I will put it this way. It is because of historical legacy issues.
Hmm.
So in the sense that we started maybe in 1999-2000. So 22nd March 1999 was when we started our business operation.
Okay.
So that was about maybe 3.5 years after NSDL. So by which time there were all the institutions, because of the regulation or regulatory push, they had opened accounts or started operating through NSDL. So because of which we are having higher proportion or large number of institutional investors. We started much later. The institutional investors, some of them have adopted to CDSL way of functioning. So there are quite a few investor accounts in institutional investor accounts in CDSL also. But because of the legacy issue, the historical reasons, we are having a higher percentage of institutional investors, thereby having a larger percentage of the share value. The number of shares in terms of units, we may be having more. But the value of the shares with them is far higher, not in terms of units. In terms of units as well as value is far higher there. In terms of number of years, we may be higher.
Correct.
Got it. So that anyway is visible in our website, On the website, we do, publish on a monthly basis the value, volume of
securities. But your point is, this is not a last 5-year or even 10-year thing. This is basically, in some way, a quirk of history. The way that all the two companies started, that's what it led to. And after neither of you had wantedly or otherwise tried to change that equation. I mean, I think it is probably difficult for them to move too much towards what you are doing and for you to move too much towards what they were doing. So, and it sort of remains in that the mix. Difference remains in the same way.
So in goals language, you can say that we started with a handicap, so that is how we would catch up as far as the institutional volume business is concerned.
Got it. Understand. And just to finish off our discussion on regulations, I think apart from your core deposit rate business, you obviously also have the KRA business. And there seems to be the establishment of SEPSAI, which I don't know, I forget exactly when that came in. But is that a regulatory risk to your business on the KYC, the KRA side?
Yes, it is.
But Sunil would be a better place to answer this, sir. He handles our CDSL Venture Limited. He is an MD of CDSL Venture.
Yes, it is a risk. It is a sword hanging on a hatch for the last 5 years now.
And Mr. Sunil, what do you do at this point? Because you've already built up the infrastructure. We are also users of CDSL KRA from our funds KYC point. How does that change, right? I mean, what can you do? Why has the government or why has the regulator decided to do this? Would be helpful to understand just the setup of why does this happen?
No, it's very difficult to understand what is their idea of this, because we are the guys who conceptualized this entire process of KRA with the mutual fund industry in 2006, and we ran it independently for about 5 years, and then the KRA regulations came out with SEBI. Okay, the first KRA in the country, and today we are the largest KRA. And then I think somewhere down the line, maybe the government thought it was a good thing to do it across all financial markets, so RBI and IRDA all had to adopt to it. Earlier, KRA was adopted only by the securities market, whereas CERSAI-based KYC, CKYC was adopted for the entire, that is telecom, IRDAI, then securities market. All these industries had thought they could use a common KYC platform. So they came up with it, but it took a huge, there was a huge challenge because many of the banks had to get in their legacy records, and getting records from State Bank and all those banks became a challenge. So we really don't know now how many records have really been updated. And what has kept us going so far is that, you know, all our records are indexed on PAN, whereas that is not the case on CKYC. They issue a separate CKYC number. And point number two is that they do not verify the record at the CKYC level. So whereas in our case, the records are verified at the intermediary level as well as at the CKYC, as well as the KRA level. So to that extent, our data would be much more cleaner. And you know, in spite of us charging 35 rupees per record and they charging about 1 rupee per record, okay, the securities market prefers to use the KRA record.
Okay. Understand. I mean, I guess this is one of those things where the intention seems right, but execution, you know, as a user of both, I'll have to say that CDSL execution is obviously better. So I think, you know, we will see how this plays out. But as of now, has there been any change in the status of this, even before COVID or, you know, in the last few years? Has there been any additional push? Has there been any other change in regulatory aspects on the CESPI side?
No, I mean, the PMLA thing came in that, you know, you have to update into CESPI as well. But beyond that, there's nothing as well. So in between, there are some, I mean, there's a lot of noise made about, then you have the CESPI and SEBI and all coming together and then pushing on the intermediaries to update their records in CESPI as well. But beyond that, there's nothing really else.
Got it. No, great. Thank you for clarifying that. I think that's, I guess, that's really candid, you know, explanation. And it.
And one more thing, you know, important thing for the securities market, you know, there are all companies are identified by an ISIN and all investors are identified by a PAN. So tomorrow, if the securities regulator comes and he says that you freeze the account of this particular investor wearing PAN so and so. Okay. So what happens is with this one order, both CDSL and NSDL can freeze all the accounts which has that particular PAN. Whereas in the case if it is a CERSAI based account, okay, KYC, then they have to mention the CERSAI based number. So that number, how it is linked to, you know, these accounts, that is not there in place right now. So they will not only have to give the CERSAI based number, they will also have to give each and every DMAT account which has to be frozen. So there is a chance that certain DMAT accounts may not come under the purview of that freeze, you know. So to that extent, I think even the regulator feels it is a better option.
Understood. Got it. I think that is very clear. As of now, at least, it seems like for good reason, this should not be too much of a worry, but we'll never know what the regulator or the government thinks of as and when they, you know, if they want to prioritize this for whatever reason.
Yeah, I mean, you never know what's in their mind.
So, last one more question, and then I'll pause for my colleague as well to ask any questions he may have. How do you, you know, from a capital management, again, this is a kind of business which is very cash generative, and I mean the overall consolidated business, very cash generative. I think you do pay out quite a bit of dividends. I'm sure you've been asked a question about why not higher dividends, and you probably have debated that at the board level, if not, you know, at a company level. Could you just help us understand what's the best way to understand how you think about your capital management, either be dividend or reinvestment in your business or any other, you know, even M&A and other opportunities? It would be good to hear how the company thinks about that.
So, post our IPO and post our listing, we had the dividend policy of around 40%. And, you know, after abolishing dividend distribution tax by government, we had added the amount of DDT to dividend payout ratio. And as of now, since last 2 years after the abolition of the DDT, we have been paying a dividend payout ratio of almost 60%. That our board has considered, and the board is going to continue sticking to this dividend policy. As far as capitalization is concerned, you know, there are regulatory requirements to have net worth. for CDSL and some of its subsidiary. So, you know, in order to maintain this net worth requirement with the regulator, we need to have roughly around net worth in a range of 300 to 350 crores on a consolidated basis. And accordingly, that amount would be always kept as a net worth. And, you know, last year in our subsidiary CVL, we had bid for a government project last year. And that had yielded a very good revenue for that subsidiary. However, for such bidding process, we need to have a very good, strong balance sheet. And accordingly, it is thought that right now, this is what will the remaining amount of profit shall be plowed back and net worth shall be strengthened. As and when the board will decide, board will take a considerate view as to, you know, whether continue with this policy of dividend payment or whether it needs to be re-looked at. So that that is something which board will consider at an appropriate time.
So I guess part of the reason that you maintain, no, and this is just an exaggerated version, technically you can pay out 100% because once you reach the 350 crores regulatory minimum, I guess for you to, I mean, I don't know whether that number keeps going up, but even if it has to go up, I'm guessing it has to go up only by a small amount. So right now, while you are paying out 60%, which is a high number, technically you could even go up to 100%, right? I mean, that's, I'm assuming that is part of the you know, policy decision making that has happened at the board level. Is that thinking correct?
Board may take you may think so, but board will suitably take the decision as and when there is need felt by them.
Understand. And is there anything else apart from dividend and retention? I mean, like either investment into a different, into one of the subsidiaries for their growth or for M&A activities or for, you know, buybacks. Is there any other choice that you're thinking about or these two are the main choices, either to keep retain it or to dividend?
I think our board has decided to retain what we are doing right now. And going forward, if there are, obviously, it will come immediately in the public domain.
Understand. No active thinking or nothing announced on anything else yet. That's the thinking.
Yes, yes.
Got it. Okay. I will take a pause here. Padma Sultan, if you're on the line, can you may go ahead and ask any questions of your own.
Sir, thank you, Sanjay. Sir, just a couple of questions particularly related to the depository business. The first question is, in the last 5-10 years period, were there instances where the DPs substantially shifted from CDSL to NSDL or NSDL to CDSL? If that's the case, why did this happen?
No, we don't think there are any such instances. Okay, there have been accounts which have got transferred from CDSL to NSDL and NSDL to CDSL. It could have happened maybe in very few instances where a DP, which is a standalone DP of NSDL or CDSL alone, which has closed down operation, and when investors have decided to, you know, shift their accounts from that DP, at that point in time they would have shifted to a NSDL or a CDSL DP, and that would have caused this shift.
Okay. So otherwise, there is, these are all very sticky customers, right?
Today, now, for if there is a DP which is running in CDSL and it has even substantial number of accounts, even to shift the account from all the accounts from CDSL to CDSL is a huge challenge. Okay. But however, if you expect the accounts to get transferred in, majority from one depository to another, it's highly unlikely because it's quite cumbersome to do it.
Understood. And last 5 years, if you look at the number of BOs, you have been ramping up significantly over NSDL. So how is NSDL reacting to your strategy to gain market share?
How is NSDL reacting to gain market share? To be honest, I mean, I will not be able to answer that question because we don't see them doing anything actually. So,
okay.
Today our market share is almost at around 90%. So, I think at the same time, we are also careful that what are they are trying to, I mean, what we heard lately is that they're trying to reduce prices or do away with prices and, you know, but I don't know how much it's going to work. So once they declare their strategy, maybe we'll try to figure out what should be our reaction to it.
Okay, got it. Sanjeev, that's it from me.
So, yeah, I probably have only a couple more questions. Hopefully, then finish the call after that. One question is, if I'm not mistaken, the CEO, shouldn't be new anymore, but when the CEO joined, it was about 2 years back, is that correct?
That's right, yeah.
And even, Mr. Girish, I think you also joined probably, I don't know exact date, but around the same time. So it's been, the new management team, if I'm not mistaken, have been 2 to 3 years in the company?
Roughly 2 years, you can say.
Okay.
We are here since September, Nail has joined September 19. I have joined November 19. And CTO has joined October 19.
Okay, understand. So again, the question was going to be given that you clearly, you know, it's been 2 years for the new management team, and hopefully it'll be longer time as well. So how, my understanding is, and I think some members of your management team have previously worked at BSC, some of them haven't, right? Is that correct? Is that how it works?
Myself, Nehal and Amit had worked with BSE and that's it.
Okay. Okay, understand. No, you know, I think part of the question is, I'll break it into two questions. Again, this may be a little roundabout, but just would love to hear your views. I think the CDSL is a, you know, subsidiary of BSE. It used to be a larger subsidiary. Now I think BSE has 20% or so market share. What is the interaction level between BSE and CDSL? Question number one. And somewhat related to that is, you know, given some of the, you know, such as yourself, some of the members of the management team have worked in BSE or come from a BSE you know, working environment. Is there something different that you have done in the, you know, once you've come on board in the last 2 years? Because last 2 years have been a very drastically superior performance for the company. And I wasn't just trying to, maybe I'm just putting words in your mouth, but it seems like some part of that performance has also had to do with the new management team. So I would love to hear, you know, on both sides, you know, from a BSE involvement to CDSL point of view, and if the new management team, some of whom, you know, many of whom came from BSE, have they done anything different with respect to the company?
At times, whenever there is required, we interact with all the market infrastructure entities, not only BSE. For operating purpose, definitely we have to interact with all the entities. And as far as this performance is concerned, I think it is attributable to the whole team that we are having at CDSL. It is not a contribution which can be attributed to a single person. So that's my view. Ramkumar, Sunil, you want to add?
No, sir, you are right, spot on as far as CDSL is concerned. We have to interact as much with BSE as with NSE, as much with ICCL as with NCL, and of course MSE, MCX, ICEX and NCDSC. I am talking from across the CDSL and the group companies.
No, I guess very nice of you to mention that it's the entire team's effort. And I'm sure some of the efforts, that some of the outcomes we are seeing today was efforts even put in 5 or 10 years back. You know, many of the points you mentioned about how you've been focused on the customer, delivering technology improvements over the competitors. I think all of that set you up nicely when the demand came. And when people wanted to sign up, they felt comfortable and easy to sign up with CDSL. By choice. So I think that's probably it. So last question for me, given all that I've said. Clearly it's been, in the last 1.5 years, especially probably has been one of the stronger demand environments for your service. You know, many individuals have signed up. I think the record number of BOs have been added in the last few quarters. given all of this and given generally, I think the business has been doing quite well, again, congrats on all of that. Is there anything about the company, about the industry, about what has been happening is not very well understood, according to you? You know, given all your interactions with investors and as well as, you know, other folks in the market, is there something that people don't understand? They keep asking you, but, you know, you have to clarify or explain.
It's not really. It's a very, it's a very simple business to understand, actually. But earlier, because it was a duopoly and the rate of growth was not very high, so people were really not interested. I think it's more in line with the last 2 years, where the markets have gone up and suddenly the stock has come into the limelight with the stock price moving upwards. So I think it's more to do with the stock price. Otherwise, for us, everything else remains the same.
Got it. I mean, that's very, again, sounds. It's nice of you to say that. I think a little bit of humility on your part, at least a little bit, or not a lot to say that. But no, I completely understand what you're saying. It seems like, as I mentioned before, you have set yourself up for growth whenever it came. It just so happened that a lot of the growth came in a concentrated period of time. But the fact that you were able to execute on that without any major failures, technology, I'm sure, is a big part of what you do. We constantly hear about, I think, RBI and the banks when technology seems to be not as well, taken care of. I'm sure at your end, between cybersecurity, backup, data redundancy, all of these are very important things that you think about.
Yeah, we do take care of it. I mean, it's always uppermost in our mind.
Right. And anything, anything particular that has to be done from a regulatory point of view on cybersecurity? Is there some kind of privacy or data that is a requirement from the regulator?
So you're talking about privacy and data privacy, right, sir?
Yeah. I mean, I know I said last question, but since we started going down this part on cybersecurity, I'm just curious to know whether depositories have any regulatory requirement as to data privacy or what either data security or data privacy.
Data security is linked to cyber security, which is, I think, your question. Data privacy presently is not directly addressed by the regulator. At the same time, right from day one of our starting the operations, the regulator, that is SEBI, has been very clear that we should not be sharing the data to any entity, any third party. So the only entity with whom we share data is the person himself, that is the BO account holder himself, and his or her DP, for the reason that they are the persons to whom the BO is operating. This is one. But the second thing is, in terms of cyber security, there are several, conditions, rules and all put by SEBI on us. As well as by certain, because we are one of the organizations which is part of the important organizations as identified by the country. So certain is also giving certain things that we need to do, we need not do. So we are, as far as cyber security is concerned, we are covered in these two fronts. And we are supposed to file regular reports with SEBI to ensure that if any instances are there, we report those instances. And regular, checks on the system in terms of EAPT, and then again submit report to SEBI. So to that extent, cyber security is taken care of well, and data privacy is being taken care of right from the beginning, but there is nothing in writing in terms of a rule book or a condition, except that single line from SEBI saying that we should not be sharing any information within third party.
Oh, great. No, I think you've clearly answered all our questions. Anything else that we should have asked you but we didn't ask you? And you're right, it is a simple business, but I think there are certain nuances, especially with respect to some of the regulatory aspects, as well as understanding what is a normalized level of demand and growth. That will probably come to us. But is there anything else that you think is worth understanding that we didn't talk about today?
No, not really.
Sir, I thought you covered almost everything, sir. One important from understanding perspective has been covered. There might be several nitty-gritties which may not, may not really interest you. Yeah.
Understand. No, great. Thank you again. Thank you for taking the time. I know I've been a little persistent about getting this call done. We've been trying. We've been reading about the company for the last, you know, 2 years, if not longer. So we just, we'd like to spend some time on the company before we speak to the management. And thank you for giving us the opportunity to speak to you and clarify our views. And you know, again, congrats on the great journey so far.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, sir. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Have a good day.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Central Depository Services Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines. Thank you.